going to ask you about your work. How is your work going?
It's going very good. It's going all right. Well, I'm bending over, you know, and get tiresome in the back off and on. But there's something wrong with my arm. I just have to see that doctor. They all enjoy that. And his bone sticking right out. And if I use an axe a certain way, well, I just pull it another way, it don't bother to.
You're still doing the same thing?
Yeah.
You really use your arm.
Oh, yeah. And with that, haven't got much pry to lift to. And no boards to roll on, and most everything. Lifting all the
things. Is it still just the two of you?
Yeah, just the two of us. There's an older man than me working with me.
Who is that?
He's a native guy. And I was talking to him, and I said, maybe I'll ask you. Maybe he wouldn't mind seeing you, you know? He's an older man than me.
What's his name?
Yeah, Simon Modest.
Simon Modest.
He's practically living in the bush. Mixed up quite a bit with white people too, and I thought maybe you'd be interested.
Yeah.
So I told him, maybe I'll mention this mess. And, oh, he said that'll be all right. I said maybe he might even come down and see you.
I'd love to come down there,
yes,
and see the work that you're doing, and perhaps take some photographs.
Oh, yeah.
And I've been working on a special job. Getting something ready for mailing tomorrow.
Yes.
And now I'll have a little more time.
Oh, yeah.
So you may see me.
Yeah, yeah. Along that river, though. Along the river, maybe.
I know where you are, yeah. Near the airfield.
Yeah. I'm just along the bank in Washington.
Not far from the road that goes down.
No, not too far down. It's just a little beyond that.
And I'll keep in mind that Simon Modest might be willing to talk to me?
Well, I it's really up to you. I asked
him.
He
would be willing.
Well, he's willing, but then I said, I'll ask the gentleman to see what he thinks.
Mm-hmm.
And what he turned around and told me, he said, maybe we'll change about. But then I said, I don't know how far it's going to carry me on, but I said, I think you're a better man than me.
Well, I'll keep you just the same.
Yeah.
Be somebody in addition.
Yeah.
If I can do it. Also, think about it. See how my time is.
Yes, yes,
but on a day like this, do you work outside?
Oh, yes.
Not
too bad. No, well, it gets pretty wet, all right. And the times there, it gets sweaty too, and then there's times again you freeze. It's just the way the wind goes and comes in.
Yeah.
It's kind of a break in between the wind, and the times there is a cold spell, and then you warm up, you know. But when you're going steady too, you get too warm. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you get paid before the holiday?
No.
Before the January?
No. No.
Did you go to the bank?
No. We were talking about trying, you know, but we end up not bothering with it. You see, the way they handle us people, you know, when we get a job, like say, Northern Ferry, you know, we got to work 1 month before we get two weeks' pay. We got to go 1 month and then get the pay for 2 weeks, and we got one coming. Well, we got to fill another 2 weeks before we get the other one. That's what we know, you know. And say, like, after 3 months there, well, then they give us this allowance. Well,
yes.
Right now they're paying, since last summer, they pay very, very good, you know, $2.05 for labor. And then after 3 months, you get this another dollar and add it up, you know, you get $3.35.
So you won't draw any salary until about May the 1st?
No, no, I don't figure to get a check till the 10th of May, because I started on the 10th, you see, 10th of this month. Well, he's just a couple of days ahead of me. But then he expects to get a check within 2 weeks, but I don't believe it. Because I know we always work 1 month before we get the first 2 weeks pay.
That could be pretty tough if somebody is down to his last to the dollar and doesn't have anybody in the family working.
Yeah, but then the way they work it, you know, if someone knows you're working, well, he'll supply you as you go. I said, same with the big. Well, I go just $75, you know, and then I don't get any more groceries.
$75. That's when he cuts it off?
Yeah, that's when he cuts it off. But lots of time I go over 100. And he's honest with me and I'm honest with him. But anyway, I'm supposed to go 75, and that's that for the first check.
You have an account with Senua?
Well, no. Most times I deal with him when I got cash. But if I haven't got the cash, well, I just don't bother them. I deal mostly with Hudson Bay.
Do you have an account with Hudson Bay? Can you go up to 75?
Yeah. He allowed me 75, but then that's the one most times I go over 100.
That you were talking about the Hudson Bay?
Yeah.
You weren't talking about Senua?
No. But similar too, you know, he supplied most of the guys that's working. I tried him there for a while, but, you know, if you give him a check, well, he'll give you $5, $2 like that, you know. Like with the bay there, well, they pay you right off right now, see, and they take what you owe them. Well, that way it's all right, but with Slim there, it's different. And, well, there's a guy, that Henry Cardinal, last night, he got all very mad with him. Well, he deal with him quite a bit, you know. It gives him everything he makes, you know. And last night he goes over there for little groceries and Slim just told him, oh, he didn't mind. And he's having got a darn thing for his kids. But that's the way it ended up. So he grabs this here big table. Oh, it's about this big. It's this long. About this wide, you know, covered with groceries. He dumps that thing right into Slim's face. Well, and Slim was going to get the cop, you know, and he took off. This here card took off. He said, this is the way I ended up with Summers. Oh, he was shaky, you know, very mad. Anyway, no cops come. But then, you know, he was drunk anyway. He interfered with him when he's drunk, you see. Well, Slim, he's fed up with that. When they're drunk, they're not scared, see, and they say things and, oh, too much, you know. And, you know, he's always giving them $1 for a drink, $2, $3. And they're all after him for money, cashing. And he gives it to them, gives it to them, gives it to them. Besides, he gives them little groceries. It's like every day. I don't know how he can stand it, but that's the way it happens with the natives, you know.
Yeah. So when a man takes his paycheck to Senua, he will have a debt with Senua.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Senua takes out of the paycheck the debt.
Yeah.
And there may be $5 or $10 left over. Is that what you're saying?
Well, what I meant was, you see, supposing the guy gets $200-$300 check, you know, and he's got $100 bill debt there.
Oh.
Well, he still gives them only a couple of dollars.
The rest is put on for the next month.
Yeah. But then most guys have dealt with similar, you know, owes that man. I don't know how it turned out. Every one of us got debts there.
You too?
Me too. Oh yeah. Since he was since the Clive time, you know. At that time he had a mink farm, you know. That's here similar. And he wanted to buy a live mink. And so happened I went to my traps and I caught a mink. It's just on the toe here, you know, on the little toe, gee. I threw him in a gunny sack, trapping out. Well, he offered me $150 for that live mink. Well, that was very good. But then I ended up with $100, see?
Which was $100 mink?
$100. $100.
Well, he never gave you $150.
No. I ended up getting $100, but then this was crediting in. You see, he wouldn't give me $1 in cash, and he was way down amongst the Eskimos. And I was living in Clavette at the time. And he had a man by the name of Macaulay, you know, trading for him right in the Clavette. It's just 200-300 yards from me, you know. And I worked for this here Macaulay, you know. Everything I'd done was against me now. You know, when I came across here, every darn thing I got, there's no place where it shows that I put in some work, you know. Every darn article I got is against me. It's all my debt. And minks and all.
The minks and all?
The live minks and all, it's all against me. I have $520 to pay. When I got here, I got a big bill there.
You mean he put the minks in the wrong column?
Well, he charged me with it. With that amount of money, you know. And I sold him I sold him three minks altogether, you know, live ones. Well, that's $300, you know, 100 apiece, you know. Another time there...
Did he give you any cash for that?
No, no, he just...
just the first one, he gave you $100.
Well, he offered... Well, I got that in credit, too, from his store, in groceries, you know. He never gave me a dollar in cash. But anyway, when I come over, I had a big bill of $520 to pay him. So I said, how come this come later? Well, he said, that's the things you got. And I said, I'll have to check your counter slips. I said, by the way, I got them all. So he didn't say any more. And when I checked them counter slips, you know, it showed where I had done a certain amount of work and brought in fur and meat and rats, you know. So I ended up with about, $78 debt. Huh. Oh, yeah. And every one of us is like that. Every native that deals with similars got some debt there. And he's haven't got his own office, you know. He's haven't got a clerk. He does the whole thing himself, you know. Trading and everything, he do it himself. And he goes day after day after day like that, and you don't know how you stand on this, you guy. No. You don't even get a counter slip. Supposing you give him $50 on account, you know. Well, he says, I'll put it in the ledger, see. You get nothing. You haven't got that counter slip to show for it. Well, me, I make him give it to me.
You
know?
You do get counter slips.
Well, he's supposed to give it to us.
But you do. You do.
Yeah. Yeah.
But some guys don't.
Yeah, well, most of them don't, you know. You see, he's got a cardboard like that on his his counter, see?
I see.
Well, he'd put your name and put on what you take. Well, then later on, say about 2 months' time, you get a whole bunch of counter slips. But he don't hand it to you right then, no. That's the way he do.
He sends you the counter slips.
Yeah, eventually. But most times, you don't see it at all.
Sometimes he doesn't even send them?
No, he never do send them. With most of us, no. So me, you know, when I go to him, well, if I take something out, you know, say an article, well, I put it down. Another one, I'll put it down. And he's always different, you know. I got to know his prices, and he's always a little more than what I got, see. And if you don't watch it, well, then he'll tell you, you stand like that, well, you can't do anything about it. And most of us are like it. He's always not right, you know. At the same time, it's a good thing he's here. Otherwise, our children would be so low that they'll just starve, from what I see.
Did you ever see anybody keep accounts on a piece of cardboard like that before?
No.
I never did.
No. That's the first one. Like, and that's the way he do it, you know. He'll fill this one side up and then turn it over.
I can understand how he works that.
Yeah.
Was terribly confused.
The way that is. But then he don't seem to have any trouble the way he handles it. Yeah. Oh, he make on the goods and on the firm both, you know.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, yeah. He's the one that's making the money, not the traveler. And most of the firm go to him, you know.
Well, the company used to make money on the fur and on the goods.
Yeah.
When it bought fur.
Yes.
Doesn't buy fur anymore here. Yeah?
Not too much, I guess. I don't know. I think similar get most of it.
Mm.
Yes.
Yeah.
All around, yeah, I think he get most of it. He should make good money on this.
But if he has all these debts,
yeah,
then he's got a... Probably has a loss, too.
Well, I think all his debts is paid for the way he's trading amongst the people. Everything is more than what it should be. I'm pretty sure he filled up a lot of his debts up.
Mm-hmm.
But then you got to do that to keep going. That's the way I look at it now.
Well, you've got to do what?
Well,
keep ahead of the other guy?
No. Add a few more cents on every article to keep going. That's the way he does it. That way, I'm pretty sure he collects a lot of his debts.
A few more cents than the company, or a few?
Oh yeah, way over.
Is that what you mean? A few more.
Yeah.
Add a few more cents
on an article. Supposedly, you see, he sells this thing now for 60 cents.
Cigarettes.
Well, that's a good price for a package of cigarettes. Well, all his goods is like that. It's
charges.
It's much higher than the bay. All around.
He charges 60 or 65 cents for a loaf of bread.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, sure. Well, he charged 70 most times. The bay, they charge 65 or something, something cheaper.
I mean, the bakery.
Yeah.
Bakery charges 50 or 55, doesn't it?
35. 35. 35.
And he charges
60
or
65? 70. Slim, he charged 70. Hmm. It's always higher than the bay. The bay, they sell for 65. The ones that get in, you know, from the outside.
There was never another company, another store here?
No.
Just the bay and Sumber?
Just the bay and Sumber. Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. The rehab.
Oh, yeah.
Did you have a deal with them, buy anything from the rehab?
Well, I was just fishing meat. At that time, they were selling just fish and meat. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I bought some rabbits from them too. Mostly fish and meat.
They didn't sell any dry goods,
though. No, no, no.
Flour.
No.
Baked stuff.
Nothing like that. Just meat and fish, rabbits, rats, carpets.
And they bought these things from the Indians?
Yeah, from
the natives?
Yeah. Mostly from the Eskimos.
And how were their things?
Oh, they were reasonable, you know, much cheaper than Summer. Way, way cheaper. Summer, he charged, say, $4 and $5 for one fish. About 33 cents a pound, that's what he sells, you know. And when you take a coney, he's selling $4, $5, $6. Well, now, oh, he's selling a lot of it. Now he's run out of meat, he's run out of fish.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he's selling all. I mean, all the reindeer he bought, you know, sell everything. Got no meat too. Well, he makes very good with that fish.
Yeah, I imagine that there's a big demand for fish, and that he can give the orders to to people who are going away in the fall. Huh?
Mm-hmm. But he's never had enough, you know. He's always run out before, just about this time, and he's having again.
Hmm.
Yeah. And he buys a lot of fish.
Where does he store it all?
Well, he's got 4 or 5 warehouses there at the back of his store, you know.
And he doesn't have to heat, he doesn't have to have reefers in there.
No, he just throw them in that cold place and keep them. It's like that little house there on the side there,
yeah.
That little white house there. He must have had about 20,000 fish in there. Just throw it in, you know, pile it up. We'll sell like mad. Always run out this time of year.
He's not allowed to sell carrier, though, is he?
Well, I think he can buy.
Can he?
Well, I think so. I was talking to Simon today, and he said, you can sell caribou meat, but you can't sell moose meat, he said.
Oh, is that the way it is?
That's what he told me. I didn't ask him no questions. But there's a lot of caribou in the Klondike now, you know. It's just close to the foothill there, say about 10 miles from town. It's all coming back down from up here, you know, going back west. And they always do that in the spring about this time, you know. And boy, they're really after it, you know.
Do you know of any people who have gone over from Inuvik?
For me?
Has anybody gone over
in
the last few days?
The ones that came over from Carnival, they all left as soon as they heard. Day before yesterday, some left. And yesterday, so they're all gone now. They're all back over there now, ready to go in the hills.
But you don't know anybody?
Not from here.
From here who has gone?
No. But then they usually take a plane, you know, from here and go right into the hills and land on the lake and hunt, you know,
yeah.
And bring their meat home. They do that in the Clyde too.
Yeah.
Well, that Red Mountain is only 10 miles from town, you know, and there's a bunch of guys working there, and they said the caravan just covered that hill, going back down, you know.
Hmm.
Yeah. It's very close.
It won't last very long, I suppose.
No, not too long. Say about two, three weeks and it'll be all gone. It'll be all down west. When it starts back like that, it goes pretty fast, you know.
Tell me how people fix caribou to cook it.
Well, you know, to start with, they'll skin it and take the hide off and then cut it up, you know. Take the arms away from the main body and take the guts out, cut the head off, and they cut it in small pieces, you know, like the ribs will come out alone,
yes.
Or then the rump will come out alone, and the back, and then the neck, and the head. Well, then, all they do, they just throw a pan on the stove and throw grease in it and fry it. Just slice it, you know, and fry it.
What kind of grease?
Lard.
Would they use here in Lubbock?
Lard.
Lard.
Yeah. Mostly lard.
Your family still uses a lot of lard?
Oh, yeah. 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 Well, mostly lard, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like when it comes to ribs, you know, like, you know what I mean?
Yes.
They chop it up in small pieces and boil that part. Sometimes they just stick it against a fire, an open fire.
Yes.
And stick it, stick into it. And
well, that's on the trail.
Yeah, that most times on the trail. But, yeah.
Now, what parts do they fry?
Well, it's the hind quarters, you know, and the arm, and like the back part. You know,
slices.
Yeah, it's been sliced. Yeah.
And, yes, go ahead.
Like the head there, you know.
The head, yeah.
The head, you know, like if you're out and you want to get a roast head, you know, you build a fire outside and then you take this ashes out, you know, and you throw this head in there. Well, within 1 hour time, if it's not frozen, you know, within 1 hour time it cooks. Just all very fresh, you know. The hide is over. You don't take this hide off the head.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you just leave it there, say, about an hour and a half. Well, most times they do that just before dark, you know. And then they'll take this head out and they'll throw it as far as they can to soft snow.
Why?
Well, I don't know why, but that's their way of doing it, you know. And, well, it cools off in that soft snow, you know. It kind of get iced over again, you know. Well, then in the morning they go over there, and no matter how cold it is, you know, say 50, 60 below, in the morning after they make fire, they go over there and get their head, their cooked head, you know, and bring it in, and that darn thing is just lukewarm.
Huh.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Then they take the skin off, you know, and tear it up and break it up, and they have their breakfast with that. It's just lukewarm.
How is it that no wolf gets at the head?
Well, right at the camp, you know, lots of dogs are on. They don't come right into the camp. Yeah. But that's one way I see them do it. And I remember my uncle had done that one time, and he threw it right in the middle of the road. It didn't drop in soft snow at all. Next day he went over there, and his caravan there is frozen solid.
Oh, yeah. It's got to go into the soft snow.
Into the soft snow. Well, then it get iced over again, you know. And it stays like that, and it cools off very, very slow.
Mm.
And then in the morning when you go out there, they bring it in and break that ice off, you know, and skin it head. It's lukewarm. It's not cold at all. It's still warm.
And who eats from the head?
Well, all the guys that's there, you know, a bunch of natives together.
Women?
Yeah, and all of them.
Children?
Yeah.
Are they allowed to eat from the head?
Oh, yeah.
There's no rule that women can't eat the head?
No, no.
Can't eat the tongue?
No, there's no such a thing at all. No such a thing as that at all. Amongst the men that I know.
Yeah. And what else? Do they cook any of the meat with other things in the water?
Well, say if they got vegetables, you know.
They what?
Vegetables.
Vegetables.
Yeah. Dry onions, or they throw a little rice in it, you know. Sometimes they throw a little oats. Sometimes they throw a little flour, you know. But most times they boil the meat the way it is, and they live on it that way.
Just plain?
Yeah, just plain meat like that. But then when they get into a place where there's a lot of meat, you know, they settle down and there's a lot of meat all over, well, then they start making their dry meat. Dry meat, you know, they slice it thin, and they got a kind of a stage inside this here canvas tent, you know. And they got poles on it, and you know, they dry their meat there. It's all, the meat, the stage is just full of meat, you know, sliced meat.
What month would that be, please?
Well, that'll be, say, like from the time they start off in January, you know, right after New Year. Well, February, March, well, like Easter is early, you know. Well, up to February, March, April, up to now.
And how is it that beet doesn't freeze up on the stage?
Well, this is inside of where they're living. And they got a rack inside this tent where they're living, see?
I got it.
And they dry the meat. They make a stage in that place, and they got a stove and everything there. And mm-hmm. They dry their meat in there. And then they make pounded meat, you know. And you take these here bones, that, you know, these bones, you know, what they call the bones that...
The long bones?
No, these here bones that they break up. The one I said they bar, well, they save all that, you know. They don't throw it away again. Well, later on, they'll take all this bone and bar it in a great big kettle, you know. This year...
The broken bones?
Yeah.
Yes.
And they'd boil it in a kettle, you know, and after they make it, they boil it, say, about 3-4 hours, you know, they take this here snow, you know, snow.
Yes.
They take clean snow and they'll throw it into this thing, you know. Well, whatever grease is in that pot, well, it comes to the top. Oh, sometimes they make half of that pot of straight grease.
There's water in there already.
Yeah, it's boiling, you see. Uh-huh. It's boiling with water.
And they make it cool with snow.
Yeah, in order to get this grease, you know, they get that big pan of snow and then take it off and then they pour the snow into this boiling water. Well, then what grease is in that pot, you know? Well, they turn out grease right now, see. Well, then they take that and save that.
They take that off with a spoon?
Yeah. They take that out of the spoon.
And where do they put it?
Well, after they do that about... Sometimes they boil it there.
No. If they take it out of the pot with a spoon, where do they put it right away?
Well, they put it in a pail like that, you know. Usually they got their own dishes and they always got pails, you know, and that. Well, they throw it in that. Well, it's grease right away, you know. And most times they'll take this bag that's in the caramel, you know. There's a certain gut there. Well, and they'll melt it and pour it into this thing and freeze it.
You know, they'll melt the grease again after it's in the pail. Uh-huh.
And then pour it into this thing, you know, this here bag. Well, usually they have a stage outside too, you know. And what is finished, well, they pile it on this here stage. Mm-hmm. And they every day they're hunting, you know, and their wives are busy making dry meat and they do work like this, you know, and try to get ready before they go back, you know. Like
before they go back to the settlement in the spring.
Yeah, in the spring. That's most times the end of March or April. And they always get back before May, before too much water.
Now that's bone grease you're talking
about. Bone grease, yeah. That's the way they make grease from bone.
And how do they use that bone grease then after it's...
Well, they a lot of times there, you know, they'll make pemmican, you know, by pounding this here meat and smash it up soft.
And what do they pound it?
Well, they most times they use a rock, you know. And they use a little axe. They throw this meat on this here rock and they pound it with this axe.
The back of the axe or the blade?
Yeah, the back of the axe. You know, yeah. And then they'll mix this grease with it, you know, with this here meat.
Anything else in it?
Well, no, it's just meat and grease.
No berries?
No.
Dry berries?
No, nothing like that. Oh, they don't throw away very much, you know. You take this here leg, you know, they split that and take the marrow too, you know. The marrow?
Yes.
And they don't throw away. They even boil the feet and eat that, you know.
It's
soft stuff there. But that part they don't bother boiling it to make grease. They just boil it to eat it and that's it. After they boil that their bone, say a couple of times, sometimes just once and then they throw it away. Throw it outside. And the dogs like that bones very well.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then they're busy tanning skins too, you know. They stick up a little stick like that and they throw this deer hide over it and then they start taking the hair off, you know. Take all the hair off with a knife. Well, then after that they take this here blade I'm talking about, you know, this strip, and then they scrape it fine.
They make
this
scrape rod.
Yeah.
Do they put the skin on a four-pole frame? Yeah,
that's later on they do that. Later on, you know, after they got it all cleaned up, you know.
First they work on a stump or something.
Yeah.
Stick.
Yeah, scraping it, you know. Well, first place they cut the hair off.
Yes.
And then they scrape what's left yet, you know, to make the hide cleaner, you know. Well, then after that they take this here bone and they start scraping this here hide, you know. And they still make it better yet, you know. And after that, they put out their stick and they throw it over that, and then they scrape it. Most times with a rock, flat rock.
Do they still do it?
Yeah, they still do it. In McPherson, they still do it. The old people, they still do it. But now they're kind of gradually getting away from it altogether. You know, when there's meat, they'd hunt from town and go a long ways and come back. Because most of them, their children is going to school right there, you know. And there's not very many goes into the hills. I understand there's about 5 families left about 2 weeks ago when they heard this caribou was coming back from McPherson. They're way up back there now.
With their families?
With their families. Well, they'll end up with some dry meat. Yeah.
Will they send any of that dry meat to relatives or friends in Inuvik?
No. No. Well, just like my mother-in-law, she sent my wife some dry meat the other day. Well, she was in the hospital here, and while she was still here, we got word that the caribou was coming down, you know, and there's some people already coming back with meat. Well, they already got some dry meat. They dried right at McPherson, see? And she got some of it, and she sent my family some of that.
Somebody sent it to your mother-in-law in the hospital?
No, no. She went home, see?
She went home.
And she got it from her people up there, and she sent my wife some of that meat.
How do they pack it to send it?
Oh, they just throw it in a flour sack. They throw it in a flour sack, and it's a little bit smoked, you know.
Yes.
And it don't spoil too fast. Unless it was in a real hot place, say, for about a week, 10 days, well, then it'll spoil some way.
So they tie the flour sack and give it to the pilot?
Yeah. Well, then they put your name on it, you know.
On a piece of paper?
Yeah.
And tie the piece of paper to the sack?
Yeah, yeah. That's the way we received this year.
Do they give it to the pilot?
Yeah, they give it to the pilot.
They don't mail it?
No.
Not from the post office?
No. Well, then you've got to pay the pilot, you know, for an express.
You pay?
Yeah.
The guy who receives it,
yeah,
pays?
Yeah, yeah.
What does it cost for a sack of dry meat?
Well, the last one I paid, see, it must have been about 20 pounds.
Really? You know,
there was fish and dry meat and dry fish. Some rabbit meat, all mixed up, you know.
Dried rabbit meat?
Yeah. No, no, it wasn't dry. The hide was still over it.
I see.
But the gut was taken out. 4.5, say for about 20 pounds worth.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Yeah.
And now tell me how that dried meat is fixed for cooking again. When you get it over on this side, then what do you do with it?
Well, most times, you know, they just take that meat and fry it the way it is.
In lard again?
Yeah, in lard again. You see, there's no bones there. Well, most times they end up frying this meat. Sometimes they throw it in the pot, you know, and wash the meat first. But most of them, they just grab the meat and throw the grease on and fry it as it is. Maybe throw a little vegetable in it, and that's about all. But most times they fry the meat straight, just with that grease.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
And the pelican?
Oh, that, they eat it the way it is, you know. After it's pounded and there's grease in it, well, they just eat it the way it is after they're through with it. And that stuff don't spoil very fast either.
Mm-hmm.
It lasts quite a long time.
That isn't the Lushu word, is it? Pelican?
No, I think that's French word.
Cree?
Yeah, something like that.
It's a Cree word.
Well, it must be. It's...
I used to know a little Cree.
Yeah.
Pimi means fat.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this year, pemmican, I'm talking about the way we pronounce it. We call it, say, you say pemmican. Well, I say in my language, etsu. Etsu.
Etsu.
Yeah. That's the same word you say. Only it's in my language.
That's Lushu.
Yeah, it's Lushu. Etsu.
Now, you told me how this meat comes from my person over here, or from someplace over here. What do you people give in return? What, will you give anything to your mother-in-law for this gift that she sent you?
Well, no, no. You see, the way it turned out is she's camped with me 3-4 days there, and then she'd go back to the hospital and come back again. And it's her daughter anyway, and all her grandchildren, see? So, well, maybe she'd send them enough for a bite to eat, just one meal. Well, that's the way it happens, but then we got to pay the express.
Do you send any parcels, or does your wife send any parcels over there?
No, like once it's here, you know, like if you want tobacco or pipe or clothes, you know, something like that, well, they help them right along.
They what?
They help her right along as they go. Like she's in the hospital there, and if she wants something, well, the family gives it to her, you know. They don't charge them. And anyway, the only thing is that you got to pay the pilot for what he did. Mm-hmm. But in between themselves, well, they don't charge one another.
Mm-hmm.
The other one help, or the other one maybe give a return, you know. Mm-hmm. That's the way they live amongst themselves.
Does she figure it up, or does anybody, does he figure it up in his head? I have sent them meat 2 times, now it's enough?
Well, I don't know how she'd take it. But I don't think she'd take it that way, because most times she got a chance to send them something, you know, she'd do it. That is if she got it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do they still fix hides in McPherson?
Oh, yeah.
Moose hide and caribou, yeah. Moccasins?
Mm-hmm. But around here, they don't bother with them. I don't know why. They show the moose and the skin will be laying around, you know. But up there, they still tan their own hides. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And make things.
Yeah. Yeah. Use it for mostly shoes and moccasins and that. But around here, well, they don't seem to bother tanning this year, moose hide. They buy it from the stores, $40 a hide. And it's not the way the whole hide is, you know, it's trimmed down, right? It's all trimmed down, and it's not as big as the main hide.
Okay. And still it costs $40?
$40. But, yeah. A quarter of it. Yeah, nowadays it's 40. We used to buy a quarter of a hide for $7.50, $15 for half, and $30 for this whole hide, and now it's 40.
I hear there's a shortage of moose hide in the country.
Yeah. Well, in this country there's all kinds of moose, you know. You go that way to Anderson River, you'd see moose all over the place. Oh, hundreds and hundreds of moose, you know. Well, this is moose country on this side, you know. On this side, all a lot of moose. Well, Malcolm is moose all around him all winter.
Well,
yeah.
How many did he get this winter?
Well, he said he's supposed to have got 6. And not too long ago, when I was talking about him there, he said he got one more. He said there's moose all around him. He says, why don't you come and hunt? Well, I never bothered to walk and hunt. You see moose all around. Same with Rudolph Cardinal on the same channel, you know, a little this way.
You mean that he's too busy with his trapping to take time out for hunting?
No, you're allowed only one.
Oh, I see.
You see, you're...
In Indian?
Yeah. Your missus is allowed one and you're allowed one. Well, that's two, see? And well,
how about feeding India?
Well, the same thing. Same thing. For a while there, we couldn't kill it. If we kill the moose, we get fined for it, pinch. But it's only 2 years back, they said, well, a native can get moose any year round. Anytime you see a moose, you can get it. Well, that's the way it's supposed to be now. But you're allowed only one. Like the head of the house, you know, he allowed one, and his missus allowed one. The oldest one is allowed one, you know. That's the way they got it. So... Anyway, him, he'll shoot 100 if he got a chance, but he don't talk about it.
I was going to say, who knows whether you've got your moose? Nobody knows whether you've already killed one.
No, they know already. And then he don't hold his mouth, you know. He'll eventually tell about Malcolm, like I'm doing now. Well, they know, like he shot that moose, like today, somebody know about it already tomorrow. Well, we know already he got three moose there last fall, not very long after freezing. One of the guys came down, you know, the dog team on the ice after freezing, and said, oh, Malcolm got 3 moose right now, see.
But that's dangerous talk.
Yeah, it is. And no matter where a native is, if he get a moose or something like that, you know, well, he'll tell another native, and they don't haul it there. He'll tell the other guy, keep going. And I'm pretty sure the cops, they get hold of this stuff, you know.
Who will do something? The cops or the game officer?
Well, mostly the game officer. Mostly the game officer. This year, what do you call that? I forget his name.
Williams?
I know his Frank Berry. You know Frank Berry? Well, anyway, he's a very, very rough guy, you know. He's very, very rough. If he catch you with a duck or anything like that, even if you've got nothing to eat, he'll hold you up by law.
He can arrest you?
Oh, yeah.
Just like a cop?
Yeah, just like a cop. Well, he's worse than a cop amongst us guys. There was four guys, you know, mining up the Mahanay River, say about four years back. And they were white fellows, you know. And they struck gold up in their Liard River someplace. Well, they ran out of grip. And he knew them guys back in the hills, you know. This year, Frank Billy. And they ran out of grip, and there was a lot of meat in the country. So these here guys went to work and killed some meat. In the meantime, Frank Bailey arrived with the plane. And the son of a gun, he seized all that meat, took the meat away from them. Left them with nothing again. That's the way he is. He don't give a damn.
Where is he stationed?
Well, he's supposed to be stationed back in Ottawa. But I understand they transferred him back to Norman Wilson. Well, I seen him here about a week ago.
Well, he's a federal.
Yeah.
He's not territorial.
No. I don't know exactly what he is. Territorial or federal. I don't know. He's a government guy. He's very rough. Well, anyway, I understand, you know, these guys, they end up packing gold. You know, put gold on their back and started back for the town. And two of them couldn't make it. Two of them couldn't make it on account of no grip. Well, they died. They didn't reach Simpson. You know, these two guys. One guy made it all right, but one guy, he turned back to his camp instead of following and going with his partners. And I understand this guy that arrived back in Simpson, he went out, you see. Oh, they were wealthy now. They stuck big money, you know. Anyway, he died too, and after he got there, he got sick and died.
The guy who went back to his camp?
No, the guy that went back to his camp is still in camp. Back home, you know. I don't know how he ended up. Maybe he died too. But the one that made it to Simpson, he kept going to Edmonton. Maybe took a plane or something like that. Well, it's only about 4 years back. But actually, you might say he starved them guys out by taking their meat away from them.
Bailey.
Oh, he's a rough son of a gun.
You mean he flew in to where they were camped, took the meat away, and left them?
Left them with that.
Didn't give him a ride out?
No. So, when there was no meat in the country again, you know, I guess that guys, well, they figured, well, let's try and make it to town. Well, two of them couldn't make it. I understand they died on the way, starved out or something down there. But one made it and kept it going. And when he died too, after he arrived in Edmonton, never did come back. And then, I don't know how true it is, but anyway, they're supposed to found gold, you know. The whole mountain is just, there's nothing to it, it's just shoveling. That's the way I heard about it. I don't know how true it is. And up in that river, you know, it's funny, you know. There's always somebody dying. Like somebody will shoot him or something like that. Always somebody dying up there. They go up and then very few come out of there alive, from what I understand.
I heard that.
Yeah. Well, there's somebody in there that's doing it. They can't be dying like that for nothing. There's somebody around there that's doing it. For sure.
You mean a person?
Yeah. There must be somebody there that's doing it. Because I understand most times they get shot. I don't know how true it is, but that's the way I heard it.
Did you ever hear of Mysterious Valley in there?
No, not by name. Not a name like that.
Just a valley where everything is warm, hot springs.
No, not in that part of the world. I never did mix up with them people to know anything about their country or have talk with them or anything like that.
What kind of Indians live up the Nahanni? What do you call them?
Well, I'd call them slaves. Slavey Indians. That's what we call them. Slavey Indians. Yeah.
You never heard of them called Espatotena?
No.
You know what that means?
No, no, I don't.
Espat?
No.
How do you say goat, mountain goat?
Well, we call it Divi. Divi. That's the name of the goat.
How about sheep?
Well, sheep is... we use the same word for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like if you take a referendum like this man I'm talking about, well, he would know. Me, I'd because that's the main Lushu language, you know. The referendum language is the main Lushu language. You know, they translated that language. You know, they make a Lushu Bible out of
yes.
it. Well, you get the real word there, like a goat or anything like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because they understand their word very well, and like me, not too much. Like in case like him there, well, he would understand. Oh yeah, I think so, because he's from that town, see.
So. I've heard those upper Nahanni people called mountain Indians,
yeah.
And I've heard them called goat Indians.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. Well, I don't know. On this side too, on the other side, that's on Yukon side. My uncles there have been over there lots of time, you know, and they'd say mountain Indians. Well, me, I don't pay no attention to them. That's only once that I ever heard it say that. But they don't say anything about like another tribe being called in a different way. It's just this mountain Indians that I've heard about.
Have you ever heard of Nahanni Indians?
No, no.
Well, you were talking about something in the country that kills people, or somebody that might be shooting people,
mm-hmm.
and I wanted to ask you about beliefs
mm-hmm.
of the Indians. Mm-hmm. How about, have you ever heard of the belief in a Nakani?
No.
That word, never heard that word?
No.
Nakani, Bushman?
No. Well, they tell a lot of stories about, old time stories, they call it that way. They tell lots of funny stories about people like that, you know. That they're kind of one-sided, like, and they don't mix up with other people too much. They're bushmen. But I've never heard about that.
Well, that's it.
Yeah.
You're telling me the same thing.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Who told you about them?
Well, for instance, like my grandmother. And maybe my mother-in-law, she knows a lot of stories, you know. Well, a lot of these Indians that I was telling you about that died in 1928, they used to tell stories, stories like that, you know, in front of me. My dad used to enjoy that stuff, you know, and he used to pay them, say, a pipe or a plug tobacco, you know, a box of match like that, and they used to sit with him, and he'd give them lunch, you know, and he'd sit to them every night, year-round. If he's not traveling, if he's home. And that's where I heard them tell different kinds of stories like that. But I don't remember them too well.
And this bushman, is he a human being like you and me?
Yeah. The way I'd hear them tell it, you know, like in them days, the Eskimos and Indians, they're always fighting back and forth, you know. And say, if an Indian will lose all his people, you know, well, he'd become a bushman. And that's the way I hear them tell the story.
If he lost all his people in the war.
Yeah, in that battle, see, well, most times he'd become a bushman.
He would go away?
Well, he would live alone after that year on. But then there's times there, you know, like when they're battling back and forth, you know, they always leave one or two guys, you know, these Eskimos. Either Wasaidi, well then this year native guy that's left, he'll try to collect his own people for the next fight, you know. And they're battling back and forth like that all the time. In them days, from what I heard it from these older guys.
And why would he become a bushman? Why would he do that?
Well, because he get downhearted and there's no relations left, you know, and he's all alone anyway. And he don't bother to mix up or look for people, and he just become alone as a bushman.
And would he become a bad person?
Well, I don't know.
Or would he just live alone?
Yeah, just live alone. He just would live alone. He don't try to kill anybody or anything like that. But,
I see.
Yeah.
That's what I mean.
Yeah. For instance, like there, one story I remember well, you know, where that red mountain up here where I was telling you about this caribou, well, below McPherson there, not too far, there's a mountain they call Black Mountain, you know. Mm-hmm. And right under that Black Mountain there's a lake, you know. And this here old-timer, he lost his son in the battle, see? The Eskimos killed his son in the battle, you know, I say about 2 years ago. So he goes to work and collect all these bones I was telling you about, caribou bone, and he makes it tapered. He tapers them, you know, and make all of them, the full length of the bone, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He make about three of them out of one leg.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd pull this thing around, say, for about 2 years. Well, this guy now, he's going to fight against these Eskimos. And they always come on top of this Black Mountain, you know, and from there they go down on a shortcut, you know. And they know most times where the Indians are. Well, when they got on top of this hill, well, there's a camp down here, see. And but before he stick this here thing up, you know, and he hardened it some way, you know, and it's very, very sharp. Well, the old Indian story says that he must have put it around, say, within about 3 miles square, you know.
A whole lot of these pointed bones.
Oh, thousands of them, thousands, hundreds of thousands of them, you know. And same time, the way they tell one, he's a medicine man, see. Well, when he put it down, well, and it's solid. Well, you can't push it down in the mold. You see, he's on solid. You know, he's a medicine man. Well, anyway, in Eskimo, you know, they'll never jump on you getting dark, you know, like tonight, you know. They'll always wait till it gets early in the morning, just before daylight. Then the battle starts, always like that. That's the way the Indians tell stories, you know. Well, anyway, this man was going to fight over his son now. He had only one son, and Eskimo killed him. So he got to the edge of this lake and put up his camp, and there's a great big field there, you know, flats, and there's no trees in there, you know. So he filled this place with this here owl that he made, you know. And he fixed his teepee very good, you know, very, very solid. It's got holes in there for bows and arrows, you know. And anyway, in the morning when these huskies came over, you know, well, they run into this owl, you know. Run to this hall.
Into
this here thing, this here.
Stakes.
Yes, yeah. Well, that's sharp bones he made, you know. And, oh, he had thousands of them there. And the way they tell the story, you know, pretty soon he hears somebody making noise like half crying, you know. And after it got daylight, you know, he found out there was Eskimos all around him. They couldn't reach his camp at all. On account of this there thing, you know, it's so thick, you know, so close together, and it's so sharp, you know. Well, he had them all, well, they never did reach his camp. Well, he's supposed to have killed pretty near all of them.
Did they get stuck on these sharp things?
Yeah, they'd fall on it and they can't get it. And they pile over one another, and they're all running into this thing as they're going, you see. It's through his medicine work too, you know, some kind of a magician trick or something like that. And anyway, he's supposed to kill pretty near all of them. Well, then in the morning, they said, well, the old man found out there was Eskimos, you know, all around him. So he threw his arrow on his back, you know, and his bow, and shoot the ones that's alive, you know, most of them are dead already. Shoot the ones that's wounded.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You killed my son. There's one, another one. And the same time, they claim his wife turned into bear. Well, she took off too. And anybody's wounded, they tear the throat as she killed everything. After they fought over their son, they left that place, went back to their own people.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way they tell the stories about this whole thing. I seen old women there in Fort McPherson that were supposed to run away from the battle. Two, three of them when I was a kid.
Who saved themselves?
Yeah. They take the bush, you know. Just like one old woman there at that time, he was telling about how the Eskimos grabbed his dad, you know, and killed the rest of the family. And while they were doing that, she took off. She remembered that. She was just a little kid. She never say how she survived or anything like that, but anyway, she tells that story, you know.
And the Eskimo got all the way down to McPherson?
All the way past McPherson.
Up, I should say.
Yeah, all the way up. They go way up the Peel River looking for Indians. Sometimes they'd find them way back inland someplace. And they'd go up the Mackenzie River, up this river and hit the Mackenzie River and go up the Mackenzie and go up the Red. Or else go, keep going up the Mackenzie River looking for Indians to kill.
Hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Why would they want to kill so many Indians?
Well, that's the way they tell stories about them. Like if a bunch of Indians kill an Eskimo, a bunch of Eskimos, well then the next year they're going, they're just back and forth all the time. When my dad was a young man, you know, they had an Eskimo leader here that lives at Kittigagsup down here.
Mm-hmm.
And he was an honored bugger. And he was kind of a chief, you know, for amongst his people. And in them days, there's still lots of Eskimos.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he went back to McPherson, all the way up to McPherson, to slaughter the McPherson Indians off. And at that time, my grandfather was trading for the Hudson Bay, you know. I don't know what year it was, but anyway, that's the way it turned out. Well, as soon as they got there, you know, most times, you know, an Eskimo will have an Indian for a partner. Like, supposing I got a good coat now, you know,
mm-hmm.
and you're an Eskimo, and you're my partner, well, I'll give you the best thing I got. That's the way they call one another partners. Well, he'd do the same to his partner, you know. And at that time, there was an Indian that was supposed to be a partner with one Eskimo. Well, right away, he told his partner about this here chief. He came here to slaughter you guys off. So you better watch. And a lot of them come. They had whale boats already then, you know.
Whale boats?
Whale boats. They had whale boats already then. And most of them got rifles
mm-hmm.
from the ships, you know.
Uh-huh.
Ships was coming in and out all the time.
The Indian didn't?
Well, they didn't have every one person didn't uh-huh. have a gun, but there was quite a lot of guns too uh-huh. that time. Anyway, well, they're just watching back and forth, you know, day and night. They got night watchmen and day watchmen, and they watch them very, very close, you know. And at that time, there was an Anglican minister too in McPherson.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, his name was Bishop Stringer.
Stringer.
Bishop Stringer. That was the way they called him at that time. Well, he must have been a bishop, anyway. Well, he was there when this thing was going on. So anyway, this here chief, you know, he came up one morning to the Hudson Bay store, you know, to buy some groceries. Well, supposing old John refused them, well, then they'd start right now, see? So, and that, it's always interpreted from this here Eskimo. He seemed to know, and he tells the Indians, you know, all the time, what's going on in Eskimo camp.
This partner.
Yeah, this here partner guy. And that's the way they seem to know. And mm-hmm. anyway, John Firth, he said, well, if you hear a shot in the store, everybody go. And he gave guns to most able guys, you know. And most of them had knives. And they didn't give a damn them guys. They really wanted to fight. Like my dad and all them young fellows, you know. They didn't give a damn for them Eskimos. They all wanted to fight. And there was a lot of guys. They were just about even, you know.
Uh-huh.
It was just about even, back and forth. And anyway, everybody waited. And they were all on top of the hill. And all these Eskimos came up, you know, at that time. Came up the hill. And they were all on top of this here hill. And all the Indians were on this side. See, just like across, about, say, 100 yards apart. And this here guy, he walks up and he goes right to the head guy. See, John Firth is supposed to be head guy for the McPherson Indians at the time.
Oh,
well, anyway, these two head guys meet. And he said, well, if you hear a shot in the store, you guys go. And all these guys, too, they had guns, you know. These Eskimos.
Yes.
On the other side, too.
Yes.
The McPherson people didn't care. They weren't worried at all. Anyway, no shot at all. And this Eskimo come up. Soon as he came out, he put on a big speech, you know, this here Eskimo, right at the door. And all these guys went back downhill. Well, and the fur come up, you know, all these fur that they've been trapping, all of that come up. Oh, don't know how many thousand pelts come up. All into the Hudson Bay store. No, and then the big fish come on. That's the way they ended up.
Uh-huh.
Great big fish come on, and then most times they'd have a ball game, football game, you know, a football
uh-huh.
game. And it's very, very rough, you know, amongst them people, the way they played. That's the way it ended up.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And after that was over, well, then they'd take off. But then the way one old tanner was telling his story, he said, well, he made medicine for them to die off. He made medicine for them to die off.
An Indian?
An Indian.
Made medicine.
Yeah.
But the Eskimo to die off.
To die off. You see, that's the way they tell their stories. Anyway, before they got back to Kittygadger, most of them was dead. They run into some kind of epidemic, a flu or something, you know. They all, most of them died off. Well, not very, say about 4 or 5 years back, you know. What, we used to pick up dead skulls all over in there.
What's up?
All over in there. Just piled up like driftwood in places.
Between here and the coast?
No, no, from Clavick down. You know, that's the way they used to go.
On the main channel, yeah. Yes, Mackenzie.
Yeah, mostly down to Mackenzie and back home, you know. And around Kittygadger, there's skulls all over.
Mm.
All over, dead bodies and bones all over. And that's the way, this year's head man of theirs, he died too with them. And very, very few survived from that, you know. Because I remember one Eskimo there by the name of Pokiak, he used to tell stories about it. He was in with this year's outfit, you know. He got to do what the boss says, he, and he don't want to make war against nobody, but anyway, he got to do what that boss did.
Yeah.
And I remember him telling stories about how they died off. Most of them never reached home. They start dying off not very far from McPherson. All the way down they were dying.
Mm.
And gradually ended up to nothing.
Mm.
That's the way they ended it. And there was very, very few that survived. And he was one of them, you know. He used to tell stories about that. This year Eskimo.
So then there weren't many Eskimo in the Mackenzie Valley, in the Mackenzie Delta anymore.
That's on the Kittygadger side, you know. They're a little different from the bunch on this side, like, you know. Like the Red Deer tribe and the same McPherson tribe, you see, two different tribes,
yes.
but they're all in. Well, that is the way they used to be. They used to be kind of different tribes, you know.
The Kittygadger are different from the people to the west.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. And, you know, the language, it gradually fade away. I said, go. You see, we start off in Red River, and we talk the same Lucian language in Fort McPherson, and it's still the same in Old Crow, but there's a little bit different pronunciation. I said, go, and by the time it reaches Yukon, you don't understand that language anymore. And the same with Hay River. You know, they start off from there, and by the time you get a good hope, it's altogether different. But still, there's a lot of words, you know, that sounds the same,
yes.
and yet it's still different all the way, and finally that gets away.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
But now there are a lot of Eskimo again.
Yeah, well, I don't know where they come. Well, a lot of them from east, you know.
From where?
East. East, way east.
From way east,
yeah.
You mean?
Oh, yeah.
Coppermine,
yeah.
And Cambridge Bay?
Yeah, all over in there, you know, they bring them somehow, since the schooling started. And then their people would come too, you know, on account of their children. Well, somehow they become a lot of Eskimos again, mixed in.
What about all the Alaskan Eskimo?
Well, yeah, they come across too from
there. They came too?
Yeah, yeah. They came too.
Do you remember when they arrived in the country? When the Alaskan Eskimo started to come into this country?
Well,
no. Can you remember that?
No. I know, I've heard about this. Some Alaskans came in many years back, you could say 40, 50 years back. But say about 25 years or 20 years more coming.
Mm-hmm.
But nowadays, well, maybe they are one.
In which days?
Well, say about 40 years back. I understand that there was a few came over. Not too many.
Mm-hmm.
But say about 10, 15 years ago, I remember a whole slew of them come from Barker Island.
Mm-hmm.
And they never did go back.
Mm-hmm.